Chronicles and chapter 14. Second Chronicles and chapter 14. Now, as a point of review, and I want to just, I would encourage you, if you've got a Bible with you in your Bible maps, maybe you could find a Bible map of Israel during the time of the kings, and that will help you out. And a lot of times you can understand more about what's going on if you know where things are. And if you'll just, I guess we can turn that down. Can everybody see this up here? I'm really primitive tonight, folks. My pointer is a curtain rod, so I couldn't find my regular ruler, so I got a curtain rod. So, but now, if you remember the story of what we talked about, Rehoboam, within 5 years, everything that Solomon had been taken out by Shishak. And, of course, he took it down to Egypt and built a lot of those things around Thebes and of Egypt and so forth down that way. But now, just to show you what Shishak did, he came up, of course, Egypt is always down here to the south, southeast, and you know, if you know your topography and your geography. And what he did, his campaign, and even the record of his campaign that they have written on the walls of some of those temples, he mentions the cities and so forth that Ezra mentions in Second Chronicles, especially Lachish. Now, Lachish, let's see if I can write in here. Lachish is right here. Now, that was one of the fortified cities. Remember that? History tells us, or archaeology says, that city was torn down and built time and time again. There's layers of times because it was a good fortress city. It was kind of like, Winchester, Virginia, that changed hands during the Civil War something like 38 times or whatever. So, you know, it's one of those cities that's a buffer. And so he built it up. But you say, well, why, if it was destroyed so easily, why did they? Because it kind of tested the army. You would have a pretty good army to get past Lachish to get to Jerusalem, especially with other cities along the way. And so it wasn't that you can just come and, you know, raid the Jerusalem, because you had other things you had to break through first. And by the time, if you didn't have the right army, by the time you got through with Lachish, you wouldn't have enough to do anything else. So that's the reason they would put these fortified cities up. So here's Lachish, but you notice what he did. Now he destroyed that, but he came up in his main army. He came up to Gezer, which was another fortified city. As you read about with Rehoboam in chapter 11. And then he came over to Jerusalem, and he took a lot of these other cities, and it mentions that. And he comes over to Jerusalem, and you remember he didn't destroy Jerusalem. He didn't lay siege to it. For one reason, Jerusalem was a huge, I mean, that would be one of the major cities to destroy. And so now they'd kind of try to starve them out if they had a big enough army. But if you have a big enough army, you also have to feed the army while they're outside the gates and everything else. But so he didn't destroy the city like Nebuchadnezzar later did, because Nebuchadnezzar was a major world power. But his eyes were not only on just taking Jerusalem. He went on up into northern Israel, remember the northern 10 tribes, and he wiped out Jeroboam. I mean, he raided all of that. And he's got it listed, all the cities that he took and looted and everything. So he didn't loot just Judah. He looted the northern 10 tribes too. And then he came on back down. Then there's evidence, extra-biblical, that he even went out west toward the Dead Sea. And so this was a major campaign that Shishak had, but he wasn't really wanting to lay siege to any one city. He'd much rather have where these cities would pay tribute to him. Now, if you'll go back to number one, if we can go back to number one, I think that's it. Okay, here are all, and this is the reason these things aren't so important, because these are the major trade routes to Egypt. And as a result, if you control a city along like Gezer or even Lachish, which is in between these two trade routes, or Beersheba, or any of these up here, Joppa, and then you have the Megiddo and all those up there, which is northern Israel. Whoever controls that controls the commerce. And you control the money, because everybody's got to go through your toll roads to get there. And if you don't like somebody, just cut them off, you know, and then you have a war. And so this is one reason they had so many wars. Now, I think what I'll do is, with this map, here, of course, is Jerusalem. Now, we're going to talk about tonight Jerusalem, and we're going to talk about this area right in here where there's a major battle that's going to take place with the Ethiopians, and that is Maresha, which was on another map, but let's don't go back. But it's a little south of it's right on this trade route from Lachish, and it's right about in here. That is where the Egyptians or the Ethiopians were coming up toward Jerusalem. And they had a million-man army. Plus they were bringing enough food. They were bringing cattle with them so that they could camp out around Jerusalem. So this was a major situation this time, a whole lot different than Shishak the first time. They were bringing their cattle. They were bringing their food in order to eat while they were surrounding the city. So they were wanting to cut off and destroy Jerusalem. Now, that's one of the areas. And then later on, we'll talk also about a little city north of there, which is Ramah, which is right in this area here with Ai and so forth. And then, of course, it's on the other city. But that's going to be about 5 miles north of Jerusalem. And we'll see about that at the last of the meeting. So let me encourage you to look at your maps. And your maps will tell you a lot because they kind of run together. So he went down to Lachish. Who cares about Lachish if you think that Lachish is in Spain? You know, it doesn't matter. These were very important places because every one of them, when he fortified a city, it was ultimately to protect Jerusalem. And whenever we're going to see later on, Ramah, which is north of Jerusalem, right about here in this area where this dot is, where Gibeon and so forth, right in that area, that is where Baasha comes and tries to stop Asa, or to stop all the children of Israel from coming down south to worship the Lord. There again, a trade route, and if you could cut off them, especially if there's a valley all around there, and it's a major trade route, then you can keep those people from coming down to Passover. And so we'll see that later on as we read this. And I hope that kind of gives you a perspective of what we're talking about and the reasons that these kings did the things they did. And so this was very strategic. Now, you can turn back on the lights. I think that's all we'll do tonight, as long as you remember that Ramah is about 5 miles north of Jerusalem, then that'll play into our story tonight. But I'm going to try to have a lot of, as I really learn how to do all this, and then get something better so we can have it overhead or whatever, where I can just push a button and you'll see everything that we're talking about. And so that's all part of PowerPoint. And we really didn't, I was told that those things were too old, we couldn't use them. And yet Brennan came in and he found the fittings and everything. And so now I've got my old computer working on that one. And I'm going to even get another fitting so that I don't even have to have that. I can have my little tablet gave me. The tablet that Dominic gave me. And so I just want to be able to do those type things. And so, that will help us now as we begin looking in chapter 14. So Abijah rested with his father. Remember him, only 3 years, a major battle. And was buried in the city of David. Then Asa, his son, reigned in his the land was quiet for 10 years. So remember, after the big, huge battle that Abijam had, where 500,000 people are killed, Second Chronicles chapter 14. Now, Second Chronicles chapter 14. We're in verse 1. So we see that for 10 years after. He took the throne after his brother, because Abijam was only on the throne for 3 years. But we see that Asa took the throne. And Asa did that which was good in the eyes of his God. Now, the one thing you're going to notice about this is how many times Ezra interjects what God does. Not what Asa does, but what God and the prophets do. Because he's very concerned as he looks back over now, 250, 300 years later, he's talking about what God did in Israel, and he's wanting to remind the people now that are in Jerusalem that are in Israel, who are now the people returning from Babylon, their history. And folks, oh, that we would learn our history, that God has indeed blessed this land. I mean, God has shed his grace on us. And that's so important. But notice now he says, for he removed the altars, he did what was right and right, because he removed the altars of the foreign gods and the high places and broke down the sacred pillars. Oh, this stuff came from Solomon, his granddaddy. And then Abijam, or Rehoboam, and then Abijam. So four people into the reign, we see all these things that are destroying Israel, the false worship, and how deep it spread and systemic, let's call it that became. And he broke them down and he cut down the images. He commanded the Jews to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, to observe the law and his commandments. He removed the high places of the incense and all the altars of the cities of Judah and the kingdom was quiet under him. Now, whenever you see high places or the Asherah, what that were, the high places, and then they call them groves in the King James, but those were like totem poles. And they would set them up with images of their gods, most Asherah, who was a fertility goddess. And then they would dance around. Remember the old story about the maypole, if you've ever read Pilgrim's Progress and other things. But really what that was a party place. And they would get together in the name of religion, of course, and have all their orgies and immorality and just you name it. That's what went on there. And it's kind of like a Mardi Gras over and over again. Just let go and have a good time before you have a feast day or whatever. And so, of course, that's desecration of anything that God would want us to do. But that's where, folks, that's where American Christianity is headed. I mean, with the sensuality that we're seeing. And so we see that it was quiet under him. And they built the fortified cities. There we go again with Lachish and all the rest of them. For the land was at rest, and he had no war in those days because the Lord had given him rest. Notice there again, you're going to see that time and again. It was God who gave him rest. Therefore, he said to Judah, let us build these cities and make the walls and so forth. Then notice as you go on down, it says, while the land is yet with us, because we have sought the Lord our God, that we have sought him, and he has given us rest on every side. So they built and prospered. There's another. Notice they had rest. They prospered. And notice Asa had an army of 300,000, a standing army of that many people from Judah, and carried the shields and spears from Benjamin, 280,000. So you can see well over 500,000 people that were ready for war. Standing army. By the way, that takes a lot of taxes to keep a standing army. And so, but they carried their shields and drew their bows. All this, these were mighty men of valor. Then Zerah, after 10 years. Now, Zerah was the Ethiopian. And now we have to go back, and Egyptologists tell us that the Ethiopians are south of Egypt. Pretty much had wars on the south side of Egypt, and the Egypt and the Ethiopians became kind of inbred. In fact, Shishak, it was his son who was Zerah, and they think he was half Ethiopian. You know, so it's one of those things where, and it wasn't long before this is the 22nd dynasty of Egypt, and this is at their high point. And after this army is destroyed, Egypt, you won't see Egypt in Israel's history for another 160 years. So this is one of those times in history where now he gathers together a million-man army. That means that he's got Egyptians. We know he had Libyans, which was to the west. He had probably a lot of the Arabs and everybody else. And they all kind of congregated. And, of course, now they're going to carry their cattle. We'll see this later on, which makes them a very slow-moving army. I kind of like reading B.H. Carroll because he was a Civil War officer, and he talked about how that Stonewall Jackson won his fame in some of the battles where the Northern armies came down. But there was an army general by the name of Banks, who was the Northern Army. But whenever Banks moved, he wanted to make sure he kept his army fed. So he brought cattle and everything else down with him. And he had about, sometimes he outnumbered Jackson by 3-1. And Jackson said, I could whip any army that carries cattle with them. Because what it does, it slows them down. And that was one of them. When you go to military school, they show you the campaigns of what Jackson did, because he can move so fast. And Banks never knew where he was going to get hit. And so that's basically what, now you have a standing army of about 500,000 men or more going up against an army that's twice as big as they are. And so I don't know about, this fascinates me. Okay, that's my pointer. But this fascinates me, folks. I like to get into the history of things and why things happen. And, you know, so here we see that that they're coming up, and it says, and so Asa, in verse 10, went out against them and set his troops in battle array in the valley of Zereth, which is in Merisha, which is down here, a little south of Lachish, right about in there, where, and it'd be right in the position where they could raid this major road coming up to, and they could cut off the supplies coming up from Egypt. So that's one reason that's where Asa took his stand. So we see, but notice the prayer now. And Asa cried out to the Lord in verse 11 of chapter 14, cried out to the Lord his God and said, Lord, it is nothing for you to help, whether with many or with those who have no power. Help us, O Lord our God, for we rest on you, and in your name we will go out against this multitude. O Lord, you are our God. Do not let men prevail against you. Lord, we're your people, and if we get defeated, then you're defeated. So notice again how that Ezra frames the commentary. He says, so the Lord struck the Philistines. Not that Asa or his great generals did it, but that the Lord struck the Philistines before Asa and Judah, and the Ethiopians, the Ethiopians before Asa and Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. And Asa and the people were with them, pursued them to Gerar, which is down here, on to the south, and of course going to Egypt. Now, don't forget, that is where this is where the big supply line. And now notice what happened. So the Ethiopians were overthrown, and they could not recover for 160 years. They were broken before the Lord and his army. Notice capital H, if you got, you know, it was the Lord and his army, not Asa's army. I like the way, as you can tell a lot by the way that a historian frames things. You can tell where they're coming from. And, of course, Ezra was a priest, and he's writing from the eyes, you know, of a priest. And so they carried away much spoil, and they defeated all the cities around Gerar, and the fear of the Lord came upon them, and they plundered all the cities, including the Philistine cities and all the rest. For they were extracting much spoil, and they attacked the livestock in enclosures and carried off the sheep and camels in abundance and returned to Jerusalem. So notice, they didn't only whoop them, they took their cows too. So it's interesting how that, I mean, this is a total defeat. When you get to a person's supply lines and eat out of their food, then you've whooped them. And so we see that they were totally broken, a million-man army against an army that was half the size, and yet it was God who beat them. Now, notice now how that, again, we see a prophet, and we said it's the law and the prophets. But notice now the Spirit of the Lord came upon Azariah, the son of Obed, chapter 15, verse 1. And he went out to meet Asa and said, hear me, Asa, and all Judah. So this man was a preacher. And he said, the Lord is with you while you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. For as long as Israel has been without a true God, now he goes back and he goes through the history of Israel, especially in the time of the judges, and how that they were up and down, and how that in verse 5, and in those days there was no peace. Israel was always at war. And he says, but in verse 7, he says, but you be strong and do not let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. So now the prophet, who's the power behind the throne, is telling Asa that if he just sticks with the Lord, then things are going to be all right. In fact, things are going to be great. So Asa heard the word, the prophecy of Obed, the prophet, and he took courage and he removed. Now, here's the second time. We see that he goes back and he keeps on cleaning out. Here's the second revival. And he clears out the abominable idols of the land of Judah and Benjamin and the cities he had taken in the mountains of Ephraim. Remember, he won a lot of the land, or Abijam had won a lot of the land whenever he had beaten northern Israel. So he's working even on those border towns and so forth. And he restored the altar of the Lord that was with the vegetable of the Lord. Then he gathered all of Judah and Benjamin. And notice, and those that dwelt with them from Ephraim, Manasseh, Simeon, and came over to him in great numbers from Israel when they saw that the Lord his God was with them. So here we see that a lot of the people in Israel had come over to Judah. Again, we see that mentioned. So there was no lost 10 tribes of Israel. They knew where they were. They just had to leave northern Israel because of politics. And so, and they gathered together in Jerusalem on the third day, and the third month, and the 15th day, and Asa, and they offered to the Lord at that time 700 bulls and so forth. And there again, when you read all that, just think that was spilled. That had to be a great organized situation. And you can imagine why they use so much incense, because it stinks when you kill that many cattle. And yet, this was what they did. Old Testament, the blood of bulls and goats. It was gory, yes, but the cross was gorier because it was a human being. And folks, to say that we need to go back to blood, the blood of bulls and goats is an insult upon the name of Jesus Christ. We don't go back to the works of our salvation. And so we notice that, and they offered to the Lord at that time 700 bulls and so forth. Then verse 12, then they entered into a covenant to seek the Lord their God, their fathers, with all their heart, with all their soul. And whoever would not seek the Lord God of Israel was put to death. Now, we can't do that. That's the reason we don't say that you can't compare Israel with the United States. Boy, it'd be great as a pastor if I could be a striker. But the Bible tells me I can't hit anybody. You know, so, I mean, I could take care of a lot of men in the past if I, no, I wouldn't want to. No, but I think you understand what I'm saying. Some preachers would, you know, if they could. And, of course, we know that religious tyrants can be as brutal as anybody else. But here we see that they put to death anybody that wouldn't swear allegiance to the God of Israel. Then they took an oath before the Lord with a loud voice, with shouting and trumpets. And notice now, again in verse 15, the last phrase, and the Lord gave them rest all around. There again, the Lord gave them rest. What does that mean? That means the Lord had to play in the hearts of the enemies. A lot of times, folks, you don't know what God's doing in other people's hearts to keep you at peace. Aren't you glad that he's protecting your home right now and a thief isn't thinking about breaking in? Right, because God is protecting you even right here. What a blessing that is. Then in verse 16, and he removed Micah, the mother of Asa, the king, and this would be his grandmother. This would be Solomon, or excuse me, this would be Rehoboam's second wife. She was still around. And she, like Queen Elizabeth over in Egypt, or excuse me, in Israel, England, what is she, 100 years old now or older? This was the queen mother. But the queen mother, notice, because, and of course, she's from the line of Absalom, who was from the line of Bashar, who was a pagan king. So she had brought all, and so this was in her family. And so what did he do? He removed her from being queen mother, because she had made an obscene image of Asherah. I wonder what that was. Don't even want to think about it. And the and Asa cut down the obscene image, then crushed it and burned it in the brook Kidron, which would be southeast of Jerusalem. But the high places were not removed from Israel. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was loyal all his days. So we see that he couldn't take care of everything, but he took care of most of the things. And also he brought into the house of God the things of his father. And there, notice in verse 19, and there was no war until the 35th year of the reign of Asa. So here we have, he had rest for 10 years. Then he probably had to have a battle for a couple of years. So for the better part of 25 years, there was peace in the land during his reign. But what happened during those times? What caused him now that he's rich, he's successful, he's extremely popular, everybody loves a winner, and everything is going great in his country, and what causes a man like that to go 180 degrees the other way? And we see now in the 36th year, remember 10 years of great, then Zerah came along, so 36 years, 26 years later, we see in the reign of Asa, Baasha, the king of Israel, northern 10 tribes, came up against Judah and built Ramah. Now, again, these were those border towns. And remember, Ramah is right north of Jerusalem, and it's right on the border with Ephraim. So that tells us that these were kind of the battleground areas. It's kind of like there's a place between Germany and France called Alsace-Lorraine. And those people speak both German and English, or German and French, and then a kind of a mixture of, because they've changed over the last 200 years, they've probably changed nationalities at least a dozen times. And so here, this is kind of like this, right around the Ramah and those places, right at Bethel. Bethel is going to change hands, and we're going to see that, in fact, Ramah is south of Bethel. So that tells us that that Bethel has kind of migrated right back into northern Israel. And we see that Baasha comes down and he says, you know, again, that trade route, we've got to keep people from going down to Jerusalem to worship all the time. And so another way that we're going to stop that is to cut off their supply route. And so that's the reason those roads are so important, especially through valleys, because you can't go around in a valley. And so Ramah would have been right in a valley. And he built Ramah, and this is still in verse 1, that he might let none go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. And he definitely didn't want him to go to the temple. Then Asa brought silver and gold from his treasuries of the house of the Lord and of the king's house, and sent them to Ben-Hadad of Syria. Now, Syria is way up north. And that's another one we won't get into. If I had a clicker, I'd go to that map. But if you look on a Bible map, it's north of Israel. But he sends emissaries up there, and he tells them, he said, to Ben-Hadad, and Ben-Hadad is going to play more and more into the life of Israel because of things like this. And so, and you'll see a major role that he has in with Elijah and Elisha. And so, but he sent to Syria, who dwelt in Damascus. He said, let there be a treaty between me and you. And he said, listen, I'll send you all these things if you will attack Baasha, the king of Israel. And so we know, even in history, it tells us that Baasha, 2 Kings tells us, that what Baasha did was he raided some of these cities up here in Issachar and other areas up here. So what did that do? That meant that Baasha had enemies on both sides. And so what he did, he had to remove, in fact, we see, so in verse 4, so Ben-Hadad heeded King Asa and sent captains of his armies against the cities of Israel. And they took Ijon and Dan. Dan is the northernmost city, and Dan to Beersheba. When you hear that, that's north to south, Seattle to Miami. But Dan and Naim and the cities of Naphtali. Naphtali was the breadbasket of Israel. And so he took cities from there. Now it happened when Baasha heard it that he stopped building Ramah and ceased his work. Then King Asa took all Judah, and he carried away the stones and timber of Ramah, which Baasha had used for building. So notice he said, I can't do this. I got to go, and I got to fortify my northern place, and because Israel's not, or Judah's not attacking me, and I got to stop building down south. I got to invest my resources up north. And so that sounded like a very clever thing that Asa did. I mean, that is diplomacy 101. I mean, get your two enemies fighting each other rather than fighting you. But there was a problem, because Asa didn't have near the army. Remember, he had lost 500,000 men, and he was still recovering from that decades later. But he didn't have near the army that Zerah had, and yet we see that we don't see Asa praying to the Lord about any of this. It was at that time, in verse 7, that Hanani, here's another prophet. Notice these prophets keep just coming up against or with and talking to the kings of Israel. At that time, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you have relied on the king of Syria and have not relied on the Lord, therefore the army of the king of Assyria has escaped from your hand. You're going to have problems with Syria the rest of your life, the rest of the kingdom. And when the Ethiopians and the Lubim, not a huge army, were very, with many chariots and horsemen, were they not? He says, you had a huge army that you thought, didn't you? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered you out of your hand. Now here's a verse that you want to underline. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on the behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. That's a great verse to memorize. It doesn't matter what's going on. God's eye is upon you. His eyes go to and fro. He's always looking for people who want to be faithful to him. And he has a reward for them. In this you have done foolishly. Therefore, from now on, you shall have wars. Remember how many times that he stressed that they had rest? But now he's going to have wars. Then Asa was angry. Notice he got mad at the speaker. This is what happens many times when people are serving God and then they turn away from God. They don't want to hear anything from anybody, especially from a good Christian friend or the preacher, especially. I mean, all of a sudden you become enemy number one. You're the hypocrite. You're the person who's just trying to make everybody else serve the Lord or whatever. You know, all kinds of things that people will say about the pastor or about a deacon or about somebody who's faithful to the Lord. Those people down there, they're just always trying to get you to do things their way and all this kind of stuff. It's sad. That's one of the sad things about the ministry is you see people that are on fire so much, living for God, and then something happens in their lives. And then all of a sudden, they're almost totally against God. I told you many times about the man who got my father going to church and just bugged him to pieces. And finally, my dad said he was going to go to church, or either Charlie Nelson was going to, well, he cussed and said that he was going to drive him crazy. And so we went to church on an Easter Sunday. And that's where I got started in Calvary Baptist Church in Winter Garden, Florida, when I was about 11 years old. And I went to that, but Charlie Nelson became chief of police in the town. And the last time I talked to Charlie, he had nothing but contempt for that he had divorced his wife. He had done all kinds of other sin. And he did not want to talk about anything spiritual. How sad. And, of course, he was, you know, this guy was old enough to be my father. And that really just caught me. I mean, how do people do that? You know, as a young man, you don't understand. And as an old man, I don't understand. How turn like that? But I've seen it over and over again. I've told you about several others, but we won't get into that right now. But then Asa was mad at the seer and put him in prison, for he was enraged at him because of this. He's getting mad at the preacher. And Asa oppressed some of the people at that time. Don't talk to me about this. If you do, I'm the king. I'm going to cut your water off. You know, so he didn't want to hear it. And notice then the acts of Asa, first and last are written in the books of the kings of Judah and Israel. So he's telling us he had sources, resources. And in the 39th year, so that'd be 3 years later, of his reign, Asa became diseased in his feet, and his malady was severe. Yet in his disease, he did not seek the Lord, but physicians. What would cause a man to be begging a God to deliver him and see God deliver him, and now intentionally, as an older man, on his way out of this world, and yet totally defy God and not don't send me a preacher, send me a doctor. And folks, there again, who's going to heal you ultimately? I mean, doctors are fine, and I encourage you to go to one when you need one. But in the ultimate end, it's God who delivers us from all our maladies. And here we see that he would not seek God. Some people think that he might have had a bad case of gout. In fact, one man I was reading said that he probably drank a lot of wine, which was a staple there. And if it was port wine, people wine have gout. And, of course, we know Benjamin Franklin had a terrible case of gout. Now, gout is a kind of an inflammation of the toe. And from what I understand, if you ever have it, you can hardly walk. And it really causes severe pain, and there's no real remedy from it. Don't know if that's it, or if he had some other disease that made his feet stink. We know there's a king that had that kind of problem. Whatever it was bad enough to cause people in the newspaper to know about it. And so we see that, and so that he did not seek the Lord. So Asa rested with his father, and he died the 41st year of his reign. And they buried him in his own tomb. He was so prideful that he was. You'll see time and time again that the kings were buried in the tomb of their fathers. That was a place of honor because who was there to begin with? David. And that was the ultimate glory. But Asa, in his pride, built his own tomb, much like the Egyptian tomb, and he had himself embalmed. And notice that they carried to his own tomb, now not a pyramid, but they would have had some type of thing to make sure he stood out from the other kings, which he made for himself in the city of David. And they laid him in the bed, which was filled with spices. That tells us he was probably embalmed like the Egyptians did theirs. And various ingredients prepared in mixtures of ointment. And there was a great burning. There again, an Egyptian burial where they would have the big biers, or the B-Y-R-S, I guess the fires, whatever they call them. But where they would have the great bonfire as part of the burial ceremony. And so here the man was, as a young man, totally dependent on God. But as an old man, the more that God dealt with him, the more stubborn he got. How sad that is. How sad it is to see people grow old and hardened toward the things of God. There's not a one of us here that have not had things happen in our Christian circumstances that has not discouraged us. Amen? You've seen preachers go bad. You've seen some of your best friends go out into the world. You've seen family members that at one time were leading, just great serving God, but now they don't even want to talk to you because you're the holy roller. You've got all that. But folks, you don't have to be like them. Because in the end, those people are going to meet God just like you are. He's the same God when you're 26 as he is when you're 66. Nothing changes except you. He's the God. And so we see that Asa slept with his fathers. And we see that now his son, Jehoshaphat. And it's interesting, the two men that Ezra gives more space to in the book, the Second Chronicles, is not Solomon or others, but these two men, Asa and Jehoshaphat, and then Hezekiah. Those are the three that he gives a lot of space to, and how that God dealt with them. But, oh, Lord, deliver me from being bitter. Deliver me from being hard. I could think of I can go through a list. I could either make me a praise list and praise the Lord for 25 things, but it takes me a little while to think about the other in my fallen nature, to think of the last 10. After you get about 15, it's kind of hard to start thinking, oh, yeah, and then it'll give you a new. But, man, I can go through 25 disappointments in my life just like that. How about you? That's just the way we are. We're negative. But, oh, that we would serve the Lord. Oh, that we would not allow Satan, and even success. This man was successful. And sometimes your worst enemy is great success. And here we see, maybe it would have been better if the Lord had just let Asa struggle all of his days. Whatever my lot thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Let's take our hymn.